Good evening, everyone. My name is Savannah. I am Senator Costa's press secretary, and I would like to welcome all of you to this live event. Thank you so much for taking time this evening to join us for a telephone town hall. Tonight, Senate Minority Leader Jay Costa of the 43rd District will be taking your phone calls as he provides an update on the budget, as well as some clarity about what is going on here in Harrisburg, as well as what's going on back at home in the 43rd District. Senator Costa will speak very briefly, and then he will be taking your questions on any topics that are of concern to you, from what's happening in Harrisburg to what's happening back home, during our discussion. As a reminder, if this is your first time joining us for a telephone town hall, if you have a question that you would like to join in the conversation, press *3 on your keypad, and we will get to your question as soon as we can. As a reminder, *3 on your keypad, and we will try to take your question, but there's a lot of you on here, which is so exciting. So without further ado, I'm going to hand it over to Senator Costa. Over to you.
Thanks, Savannah, and good evening, everyone, and thank you very much for joining our telephone town hall this evening. I think, as some folks know, this is something we try to do 3 or 4 times each year to communicate with the folks who reside in our 43rd district, and it's always my pleasure to take the questions and have the conversation discussion about, as staff said, some of the things going on in our region here in Pittsburgh and also in Harrisburg. There's quite a bit to talk about, so I wanted to provide a brief summary of where things are at right now and then get into conversations about some of the things that are concerning to the folks who are participating in tonight's town hall. As you may remember, back at the end of June, early July, we passed a budget that Governor Shapiro put together, along with many of my colleagues, that resulted in about a $44-some billion budget that included significant increases in public education, as well as other investments in, throughout our communities relating to crime prevention measures, also talking about some environmental investments that needed to take place, and a variety of other things that were part of that general fund budget. At that time, we had a stalemate with respect to some of the issues in the education space. Our colleagues in the Republican side of the aisle, along with Governor Shapiro, were so very supportive of a voucher program, which would have provided $100 million of state funding into various communities as it related to a voucher for school districts, students who wanted to attend schools outside of their respective school districts, private schools. Working together with our House Democrats, we were supporting something called $100 million for a level-up program that would address the shortcomings in many of the school districts across Pennsylvania, 100 least-performing school districts. At the end of the day, that became a stalemate that prolonged the impact that we had till much later, like a month later, 5 weeks later. It culminated with the signing of the budget itself, but did so without something referred to as the fiscal code, which is an implementation document. That document, that legislation, allows us to implement the appropriations that were made in the bill, in the GA bill, General Appropriations Bill. That being said, it prohibited us from making a significant number of expenditures that have been approved through the budget but not been authorized to be done yet. I know this kind of gets complicated, but at the end of the day, there are a number of areas that we've not reached consensus on, including the two I mentioned, the Lifeline Scholarship Program as well as Level Up. In addition to that, a whole home repair program. We've been advocating strongly for additional $50 million that was approved in the budget, but the language has not been authorized yet, to continue a whole home repair program that allows folks under $80-some thousand annually to make repairs to their home, whether it be windows and doors and roofs and sidewalks and things of that nature, to ensure that they could live in their homes comfortably and appropriately and stabilize in our neighborhoods. That program is underway right now with $125 million of federal money we received, but no state money, and we're trying to extend that program. It's a very valuable program. Two other things we've been advocating for, in addition to Level Up and Whole Home Repair, have been related to something called a student-teacher stipend. Right now we have a shortage of teachers across the Commonwealth. We're trying to get folks, to incentivize folks to become student-teachers. One of the ways to do that is to provide them with a small stipend to be able to serve as student teachers while they're not in school and being able to help offset the costs associated with that. And also an Indigent Defense Fund, which is something we're one of the only states that does not have an Indigent Defense Fund. This will allow for that to take place as well. Those are some of the stumbling blocks that we're facing right now, and we're going to continue to work through that over the course of the next several weeks. We return back to session on September 18th, 2 weeks from yesterday, and we have a few of those things that we'll need to work on as we go forward. One of the other important issues that's lingering that needs to be resolved as it relates to 2024, and we expect to continue to move legislation along those lines. We did so last Wednesday when we were in session, and that relates to our primary election date next year. Our primary election date for 2024 is scheduled for April 23rd, which is in the middle of Passover, and we need to make a change along those lines. And the conversation has been about moving the election from April 23rd. It's in April this every 4 years because it's a presidential election. That's what our law says right now. And we've moved it in the past. It's been a number of years since we moved it forward. Back in 2020, we moved it back to June 2nd. But this time, we're going to be moving it forward. The question is, what date do we choose? Will it likely be March 19th? Will it be March 26th? Or will it be April 22nd? That question has been unresolved. The legislation we moved out of committee last week has March 19th identified as a potential date. But again, it remains to be seen with our conversations with our colleagues in the House of Representatives, what date they think is best. Each of the dates we look at present challenges. If we do March 19th, that means we have to go back 13 weeks to begin the election process, which commences with the beginning of circulating of petitions, people getting on the ballot. It's a 13-week period right now, and the question is, if we go back 13 weeks from March 19th, that brings us to December 19th, which is the beginning of the Christmas holiday season and Kwanzaa season. You'll be circulating during that period of time for those 3 weeks into the new year, and that's one of the issues that's been raised. Also, counties have objected as well because they need to then change the manner in which they're able to get places that they can have the polling places. That's a big challenge for the counties across the Commonwealth. Just here in Allegheny County, I think we have over 1,300 precincts. 1,300 districts, maybe close to 1,000 places that folks vote. They'd have to go back and reschedule a number of those places, and sometimes they coincide with school days and the like and become problematic. The next day is March 26th. Similarly, when you go back 13 weeks, it takes you to December 26th, the day after Christmas, that folks will begin to circulate a petition. Also, the week of March 26th is a big part of the Holy Week for many Catholics in the Commonwealth. That begins it gets Tuesday, Holy Thursday, Good Friday, Holy Saturday, and Easter Sunday and Easter Monday would follow that, but the 26th would lead up to that. And similarly, April 2nd would be 2 or 3 days right after Easter. So the concern is that those are some of the issues that we're facing. At the end of the day, it's very likely to be April 2nd, because that allows us to begin to circulate the petition process and begin the election process on January 2nd, which I think what folks would like to be in that regard. That all being said, those are some of the conversations that we're going to be having with folks, and we bring that to closure. We need to bring it to closure the first week of October or the second week of October for the reasons I stated. Let folks know that that's going to be the case, and secondly, let folks know, the counties know, that they're going to have to rearrange the scheduling with regard to when folks, where they can vote at. That's going to be a big issue going forward. So those are probably the two main issues that are happening in Harrisburg right now. Back here locally, we continue to work closely with our colleagues at the municipal level, working to be able to bring resources back home, and particularly in the economic development space and infrastructure space. We've had great success bringing in resources to our communities. In the coming weeks, we're going to be making investments in our water and sewer space, working closely with a lot of our water authorities and sewer authorities to drive out millions of dollars into our communities here as well. And finally, later this year, we'll open up something called Local Share Account, which will allow us to work with nonprofits and local municipalities to bring resources back to assist them and to assist small businesses that are trying to grow with investments along those lines, with capital investments. So that's a quick summary of where things are at. I'd really like to talk with all of you about what's on your mind and answer any questions you might have. So, Sav, after that long-winded introduction, I'm going to ask you to maybe give us the first question.
Oh, that was a beautiful introduction, Senator. For those of you who are just joining us, welcome to the telephone town hall this evening. If you have a question that you would like to ask the Senator, press *3 on your keypad, and we will get to you as soon as we can. We're going to start from a question that someone sent in online. Here's a question from Fred from Squirrel Hill. He says, I recall during the governor's original budget address that there would be additional money for community safety programs. What happened to that money in the final budget, or is it available?
Yes, it is available. In fact, that's $5 million that Representative Dan Franco and I each year are responsible for getting into the budget, and it's allocated to a lot of community groups and organizations, faith-based organizations and many others. So we've had great success here in Allegheny County, drawing down always a significant portion of that. I believe the application period is open right now, if I'm not mistaken. I'll double check on that and try to get an answer for you before the end of the program. But I know we did do a press event, or we did a Twitter thing that demonstrated that that window is open, I believe, right now. So that money is there. It survives having the needs to be done with the fiscal code, and PCCD is driving those, you know, beginning to take applications, and will drive those applications and those grants out shortly.
Thank you so much. Next, we are going to go to Carol from Wilkinsburg. Carol, go ahead.
Well, I called because I was interested in knowing if Pittsburgh has a rent control board.
We do not.
Have they ever had one?
I don't know for sure if they've ever had one. I think maybe back many years ago. I don't, not that I'm aware of, but I don't believe they've ever had one, but they could have had one maybe around the turn of the century, around the Depression in the late 20s, early 30s, but I'm not certain of that.
All right, so the realtors here can just raise rent, the percentage of rent as high as they want to. Because I'm a senior citizen, and I live in Wilkinsburg, and I live in a building where there are a lot of senior citizens and probably a lot of people whose incomes are half Social Security. And if there isn't one, who could I contact to find out or get some information about how that could happen?
Well, I mean, the municipality, like, for example, in Wilkinsburg, they would have to adopt a program along those lines to say that they're going to implement a program like that, is my understanding. I don't believe Pittsburgh has one or Wilkinsburg has one either, but that's usually at the local level by the local municipality. I would reach out to the mayor of Wilkinsburg or also reach out to the council members or even call the borough building and speak with the borough manager to get an answer and help direct you in terms of how that would be done. It's typically done through ordinance. Would be the way that it would have to be done.
Thank you so much, Senator. We're going to take another question from online. Nick from Point Breeze says, there's another shooting every single day at a school, at a shopping area. When are people going to take the gun epidemic seriously? We need some common sense gun measures. And full disclosure, I'm an NRA member and I teach gun safety classes to young people. What are you doing in Harrisburg?
Well, we're trying to do a lot, and I think what we've been trying to do have been reasonable and responsible measures. And thank you for the work you're doing. As a member of the NRA, I think you know that there are some who believe that that's part of the issue, the NRA membership in Harrisburg and nationally. But at the end of the day, you're taking steps to be able to work with young folks to understand the significance of weapons and what they can do to people and how they can change people's lives, both in a intentional way with respect to using them for acts of violence against others, but also sometimes what we find ourselves is folks having access to weapons ends up in a bad way. At the end of the day, what we've been trying to do is do a couple things. One is reasonable background checks, universal background checks. Legislation, I believe, has come over from the House to the Senate. Also looking at lost and stolen weapons, something we need to take a look at. We've also done the emergency risk protection order legislation that I think enjoys pretty wide support among people in this Commonwealth, and I think nationally as well. Those are just three examples of some of the things that we think that we should be passing in the Senate. We've tried a number of things to be able to do that. We've tried amending it on the floor into other types of bills. Each time those are rejected by our Republican colleagues. We've tried to do something, a discharge petition, which after 10 days forces things to be done. It forces a vote on moving that legislation. That, too, has been rejected by our colleagues. So we've tried, the House has passed measures, the Senate, we tried to do it by doing different procedural steps. Unfortunately, we're not able to get the support of our colleagues on the other side of the aisle to drive those things home. We know that some of them, if they hit the Senate floor, would pass, particularly the emergency risk protection order, but also know that the governor will sign those as well. It's just frustrating we just can't get those things to take place for a vote. And oftentimes we think about the shootings that you mentioned that are happening in our communities every day. We lost two beautiful kids here that were killed, gun victims, two seniors in high school up the street from my house in my office, the Woodland Hill students. And at the end of the day, that's always tragic. But it goes beyond that. It goes beyond the violence in the community. And by the way, we're putting significant resources and gun violence prevention programs as well as community programming to be able to offset that. In this year's budget, I think we added an additional $35 million to do that, as well as mental health programming resources within our school district and school safety dollars, $100 million in each program, to be able to support the school districts to be able to help combat some of that at that level. But that being said, we need to do more along those lines and take steps to ensure that we are removing guns from places they don't need to be. That's where the emergency risk protection order comes in. The number of people who have access to weapons who commit suicide is alarming, and that's frightening, and quite frankly, it's something we need to get our arms around, and that's what emergency risk protection order would do. It would be a process by which if someone is identified in a state of crisis and there's weapons in the home or accessible to them, that a family member or a significant spouse or other person could petition the courts to say, this is what's happening. This person is in crisis. I have access to weapons. It would temporarily remove the weapons from that person to allow them and then work with them to be able to resolve the crisis that may exist. To me, that's something I think we should be looking at, particularly with our young folks as well, when we know that they're suffering with the amount of mental health concerns raised with our young folks has been dramatically increased in part because of COVID. So that's what we've done, and that's what we're going to continue to work on.
Thank you so much, Senator. And just to remind everyone, if you have a question you would like to ask, you can press *3 on your keypad at any time. Next, we are going to Chuck in Bridgeville. Go ahead, Chuck.
How are you doing?
Good. Well, thanks. How are you doing?
Doing well. My question, I'm a family base worker. It's a Medicaid program that's funded through the state. We're like third tier in mental health provision for pediatric psychiatric care. So essentially, I work with families throughout the Allegheny County area. One of the things that we're running up against is that we're losing good people on a regular basis due to lack of funding and the salary compensation. And viewers are talking about like suicide prevention and stuff like that. That's what we have a 24-hour crisis service. We help prevent these tragedies from happening and help prevent kids from having to go to residential treatment facilities or hospitals. My question is the state looking at ways to increase funding to the program so that we can retain and gain qualified individuals that need a master's degree job that on average probably pays about $45,000 a year, which is not a lot of money for a person who has a master's degree. So as soon as those people get licensure, they leave, which is like 2 years, and we lose good people all the time. So I'm just kind of curious if you guys are looking at this or if you're even thinking about it. And I'll be quiet and I'll listen now.
So the answer is yes. And first of all, thank you for the work you're doing because that is extremely important. And you've really identified an issue that we're dealing not only in the space that you're talking about, but in many of the what I'll call human service delivery programs across the Commonwealth and healthcare delivery services as well. Last year in budget, we did provide significant resources primarily to our folks in our nursing home community and our healthcare delivery community to provide resources to those entities to be able to do exactly that, bump up salaries and also do retention programs and recruitment. And this year in this budget, we weren't able to do as much as we would like, but that is something that I think we continue to struggle with. The need is great in a number of areas, whether it be home care workers or the work that you're doing or so many others. There's a tremendous shortage of folks who want to work in this space, and we're trying to take steps to do that. And in the healthcare profession, we've done some work with loan forgiveness program for our nurses. I've been advocating for what I'll call mental health resource persons to be able to do something in that space and counseling, basically, to provide a loan forgiveness program there as well. These are all things that we should be doing. We haven't done enough of it, quite frankly. We had the benefit of federal dollars that allowed us to do it over the course of the previous 2 years. But now those federal dollars are gone, and now we've got to find the time to be able to make ends meet to be able to do that. And that needs to become a priority for what we're doing, because right now that is a critically important space that we need good folks in there with degrees and the like to be able to work with folks to address the crisis they might be dealing with. And beyond that, having the facilities for folks to go to and having folks work in these facilities that are able to be there and do a good job and address their shortage, the workforce shortage they're dealing with as well. So it's a complex problem we're trying to get our arms around, and we have more work to do in that space.
Thank you so much, Senator Costa. Next, we are going to Pauletta in Oakland. Go ahead, Pauletta.
My question is, when I renewed my registration, car registration, I paid $44, and they've added on, this has been going on for several years now, they've added on a $5 annual fee for local use. Now, what is that local use? What are they using my money for?
That goes to Allegheny County. Has chosen to implement a $5 per car registration fee, and that money goes to Allegheny County. They use it for investments in roads and county roads and county bridges and the like.
Thank you so much, Senator. Next, we are going to Tanya in Homewood. Go ahead, Tanya.
Oh, hi. Good evening, Senator, and everyone.
Good evening.
You had mentioned a program for home assistance.
Right.
What is that? Is that geared to seniors, low income? So
oh, yeah. There's an income limit. I think it's in the low 80s. Thousands. I think if you just reach out and type in Action Housing and look for whole home repair, that's where the program will be helpful. Or if you want to give the office a call tomorrow, 412-241-6690. Some of our staff can work with you. But you want to hurry up and do it because the window's open right now, but I think they've got a lot of applications, so you want to at least get either in on the program for Allegheny County or on the wait list. Last year, we did $125 million, of which Allegheny County is going to receive about $13 million. But the application, the number of applicants is significant. It's like 5,000 or so. So we got to make sure we encourage folks to do that. We've been pushing it hard. And, again, we want to add another $50 million this year so that we can get an additional $7 or $8 million as part of this year's upcoming budget if we get that done. And
thanks.
If I could go back, Stab, real quick on the nonprofit security grant program.
Yeah.
It did open on August 21st, and it stays open through August 10th of 23. So folks have about 5 or 6 more weeks to be able to submit the application. But at the program, as I mentioned, Representative Franco and I have been created and advocated for, and it provides protection for those individuals, quite frankly, who are in a category that represents based on FBI investigating and hate crimes statistics, as it relates to race, ethnicity, ancestry, religion, sexual orientation, disability, gender, or gender identity. If you're part of an organization, if your organization works in that space that's identified, again, by the FBI as a population at risk, those organizations would be eligible to apply for those funds. And we're always trying to push that number up. And it can be used for a variety of different things, whether it be security planning and safety security planning. It could be purchasing security equipment like metal detectors. It could be surveillance equipment. It could be, doors and things of that nature. It could be training. It could be, threat awareness so people can understand and respond to recognizing a threat that may exist. Vulnerability assessments would be done. All those things would be things that these programs could be used for. So I really encourage, if you're part of an organization that does that, that's something we should look at.
Thanks so much, Senator. Next, we are going to take a question from Donna in Lawrenceville. Go ahead.
Good evening, Senator Costa.
Good evening.
Thank you for doing this. I appreciate it. And my question is regarding grant money, like from the Keystone Communities Program, for example, which is meant to help revitalize ailing communities. And so I'm wondering what support is there for the communities that may not have the expertise or bandwidth to apply for these grants. From my experience engaging with communities in the Mon Valley, I'm concerned that some communities that the program is meant to help are unable to access these funds. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a great question, because sometimes communities simply don't have the resources to be able to hire a grant writer or someone who would put into the grant the appropriate buzzword, so to speak, to maybe draw the attention of individuals who are reviewing things in Harrisburg. I would suggest that you reach out to whatever community it is and maybe reach out to the member, Senate member, and House member that represents that community or that community group in that area, and ask them to help support what you're doing. Ask for letters of support. Provide to them some of the nuances of your program that they're trying to get support for, or whether it's a capital investment or whether it's programmatic dollars. Share that with the member and have them advocate on your behalf as well. Sometimes input from members and greater awareness, and just get, whether it be DCG to Keystone Communities, to look at the application can go a long way towards trying to get something done along those lines. But please know that these grant programs are extremely competitive, and the amount of available money compared to the applications are typically like, you know, there's a dollar available for every $10 that's requested, and it is difficult to get the attention of organizations along, or get the attention of the folks in Harrisburg who are reviewing these applications and scoring them. And I think scoring is a big part of this conversation. That's why it's important to understand how to do those. If you don't have the resources to do it, I think you need to look for some technical support, technical assistance, not only from the agency, but also from the local officials who represent the community.
Thank you so much. Next, we're going to Barbara in Homewood area. Go ahead, Barbara.
Yes, hello, Senator. My question was, and I'm not sure what they meant by some of the schools don't have the proper air conditioning for these schools. And I'm familiar with Westinghouse. I don't know if they updated their system for the air conditioning, but I believe the city should put forth some money to put air conditioning in all the schools, every one of them. Why would the kids stay out of school again? They did it towards the pandemic. Now they're going to put them out because of air condition, when the city and county should have some money to put air condition in all schools?
Yeah, that's a great question and a great point, I should say. I learned recently that many of the schools, and particularly in the city of Pittsburgh that we represent, don't have air conditioning, and it was troubling to me. And I know that a lot of these buildings are old buildings, and to convert them from the traditional radiator heat and you know, some other type of cooling, something that needs to be addressed. I'm sure it's quite expensive, and that's one of the reasons why some schools have opted to close long-standing older buildings and build new ones in some districts across our region. But I do think it's something that the school district needs to address going forward, and I look forward to having a conversation not only with the superintendent, but with others at the school district as well, board members, to be able to discuss it, because I think it's a very good point. If kids can't learn in an appropriate environment, then it's difficult. And, you know, as you know, there are other issues beyond how warm it is in a classroom. You have some classrooms in some parts of the state and in our county that have some issues along the lines of proper ventilation, even if, you know, things of that nature. You've got lead paint in some schools. You've got lead in some of the water pipes in the buildings that needs to be addressed. There's a whole host of those type of issues that exist in school districts across Pennsylvania. And we're trying to get our arms around. We advocated for about $1 billion to be added from the money that we got from the federal government to be able to address these type of things in school districts across Pennsylvania. The governor ended up proposing about $100 million, and I think we're going to end up with putting $50 million in this space to help school districts address some of the things we just talked about. The kids got to learn in a good environment. And, you know, a couple of things, that, you know, one of the things we did is I mentioned the money for our school buildings, the capital side. We also put $35 million into a free breakfast program for kids. A lot of kids are coming to school across the Commonwealth hungry in the morning. And it's unfortunate that's the case. And one of the things we're going to be doing now is we have a universal free breakfast for folks across the Commonwealth. So we're assisting our school districts in doing that. And I think it's wise to be able to fill somebody's belly and so they're not hungry when they're trying to learn. But it's trying to learn on an empty stomach and trying to learn in a very warm building, maybe toxic building, is not a good recipe for anything. So that's why we're trying to take steps to address that. And we need to do more with our school districts to do that on the capital side.
Thanks so much, Senator Costa. And for those of you who have questions, as a reminder, you can press *3 on your keypad. We're going to take a question from the Internet very quickly. This is from Terry in the Hill District. Terry says, more and more, I'm seeing video poker machines at local spots and even corner stores. I thought there was tighter control for these types of video games, but they're everywhere. How are these legal?
Well, first of all, it's a great question. They are technically not legal. You're referring to games of skill, which have been popping up in various places, in convenience stores and gas stations and other places along those lines. They were designed not to be available, but that despite that, there have been a couple conflicting court decisions that have allowed them to be placed in a number of places across the Commonwealth. And it's disturbing. So we just had a hearing on this issue about 2 weeks ago down in Delaware County. I'm pushing to eradicate them. I don't think that they're necessary, particularly where they're located at. We do have video poker machines that are permitted. They are permitted. Five of them are permitted at truck stops across Pennsylvania. I think we've done more than enough in terms of our gaming, and I think we need to sort of slow down that process in terms of expanding any more gaming in the Commonwealth. So I am not a supporter of legalizing these skill games. I think we need to do away with them. We also have in our bars and taverns across Pennsylvania, the VFWs, American Legions, and the like, the opportunity for those groups to be able to work with what are called small games of chance. There's a process by which they apply for that small game of chance license, and they're able to do that in their facility with their membership. That is something I do support and I think makes a lot of sense for us to be able to do. So I don't support them. We're trying to get rid of them. And we're having a difficult time getting the enforcement because of the conflicting court cases. There is a court case or two before the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania that they've not rendered a decision on, and once that comes forward, that'll give us better clarity along the lines of what happens next along those lines.
Thank you so much, Senator. Next, we are going to...
Hey, Sab, just real quick. I just see there's a question about, from, it looks like, Veronica in Pittsburgh and Wilkinsburg about their rent rebate. What I would say to Veronica is give our office a call, 412-241-6690, and someone here will be able to speak with you and try to track down what the status of your rent rebate program is. It's a function of when you apply. When you apply, you kind of get in a queue, and they started sending out checks, I think, in July, early July. And so please give our office a call. Someone will check for you. Go ahead.
Well, while you're talking about property tax rent rebate, would you like to talk about the expansion of it?
That is a great point. Thank you. Yeah, last year we did a significant increase. We, for those individuals who were receiving a property tax and rent rebate, we gave a 70% bonus, which was wonderful. We were able to do that last year to help offset property tax. Any type of increase is helping folks deal with their bottom line, their budget. So that was a significant increase, almost doubling what they were receiving. This year we made some changes. We increased the amount, I believe, up to $1,000. But more importantly, we increased the income limits. For those owning a home, we increased it from $35,000 to $45,000. So a significant number of folks who were not eligible before will now be eligible. Same thing with renters. Renters right now was $15,000. Now we moved it up to $45,000. So a large number of renters will be eligible to receive property tax and rent rebate through that process. In addition to that, we've also tied that our annual increase to the cost of living increase from Social Security. So if your Social Security goes up, the income limits go up as well. So no one will be falling off because they got an increase in Social Security. So that's an important program, and we've made significant changes there. And thanks for reminding me, Chad.
Anytime, at long last. Ted, thanks for bearing with us. You're on the air.
Very first, look at Lincoln Place. My question is about the earned income tax change that was made in 2005 to address the city of Pittsburgh's financial distress. It removed 0.25% of the earned income tax from the school district and put it into the city to address that. Now that the city is no longer in financial distress, what is the state doing to move that back to the school district?
So that's a question that we addressed back then when we modified the taxing structure for the city of Pittsburgh and the school district. And quite frankly, that change was part of a comprehensive approach to what we needed to do. So while that money now flows to the city of Pittsburgh, in fact, even today, I think today we received a call from a school board member asking the same question. What is important that folks don't remember is that during that process, we offset the loss of revenue that the city of Pittsburgh received, the school district received, by creating a special category for the city of Pittsburgh school district that allowed them to receive resources baked into their base. So that your base will always reflect that increase over those period of years that they continue to receive to this day. So while it looks like they're not getting 0.25, we've offset that and put that into their base, so that becomes part of what they're receiving from the state. But I think now is a point in time we need to go back and reexamine that and try to figure out exactly what it is that we need to do to make sure that it becomes more equitable. But you're right, Pittsburgh is now in a different situation. We provided a payroll preparation tax. We eliminated a couple of other taxes. The problem has been we've not been able to receive the payment in lieu of taxes from the nonprofit entities that were contemplated and agreed to back then, which is extremely frustrating. The city has not been collecting those proceeds from those entities to the extent that they need to. I know the UPMC is one that does participate and just did so with another $100 million. Certainly there's more that can be done there, but at the end of the day, that's where that issue lies.
Thank you so much. Next, we are going to go to Franny in Brownsville. Franny, go ahead.
Hello. Hello, and thank you, Senator, for taking my call. I have several questions. One is the protection of our children. I'm confused about the outer schools having the security systems, like when there's an intruder or someone's coming in with a gun. Like the inner city children, we don't have that protection, okay? The second thing is, why don't we have that access? Because I know it's more or less, and I don't want to make this seem, I don't know how to put it, but it's like the area that you're in, like Churchill, Fox Hill, Fox Chapel, things like that. They have an emergency button. God forbid there's an intruder. They get an automatic lockdown and it goes straight to the police. What about the Pittsburgh public school children? The second thing is the children that have special needs, they are the first ones to go back to school. The third thing is there's a lot of houses within this area that needs to be condemned, and when I reach out and call 311, and they say, okay, we'll send somebody out there. The houses are, and I've seen it on the news, and y'all can only do so much. But these are the things that I would like to know, like, how can you better help us?
So a couple things. One, the disparity between the security measures and security protection. There's a program that's been available for a number of years now, probably 5 years now. It's called School Safety Program through what's called PCCD, Pennsylvania Commission on Crime and Delinquency. Every school district gets some money, and school districts can apply for additional amounts to be able to do the things you talked about. I don't know whether Pittsburgh has been applying to access those resources, but that's been available to them, and I can double-check with them to see what the status of that is. I can't speak to the specifics about a lockdown button, but that's something we can certainly look at. But those are school district decisions as to whether or not they're going to implement those programs. But we have provided a bucket of money for them to be able to go and receive some, and they all receive some along those lines. With respect to the housing issue and condemning homes, again, that's a municipal function, but we provide resources to help local governments be able to do that. It's an expensive process. It's a lengthy process, and it's an expensive process. That's why we have put in together what I'll call these programs that allow community organizations to come in and take over, petition the court to take over properties to address. And I think it's a good program along those lines that's implemented here in Allegheny County, and I think we do it well. More work needs to be done. That's also why we have the land bank now legislation that allows organizations to do that. For example, in Wilkinsburg, they put together a very strong land bank program that allows them to be able to emphasize and work in certain areas to do that. and we also provided resources to help assist them in that regard. Pittsburgh has this land bank now. This is getting in, things are getting into order. We just passed Senator Fontana's legislation along those lines to make it easier for local governments to go through the process to acquire those properties, whether it be local governments or whether it be land banks. So we're trying to take steps to eradicate as much of this blight as we can. It takes time, but it also takes resources. At one time when it cost, $5,000 to remove a home, now it costs like $25,000 to tear down a home. And these are simply resources that a lot of our small local governments simply don't have. And they have to prioritize the dollars that they do have as best they can.
Thank you so much, Senator. Next, we are going to Joel in Squirrel Hill. Joel, go ahead.
Thank you. Good evening. My question is about the PWSA rate increase that was requested in May from the PUC. I wanted to know, I know there was a public hearing in August. Is there any more information on whether the PUC will approve the rate increase?
I don't have any additional information. Typically what occurs is that they go through their process. We've just appointed a new member to the PUC, a longstanding chief of staff to then chairperson, Gladys Brown Dutrell. We've also named Steve DeFrank as the chair of that committee of the PUC. At the end of the day, the way these things work, I think they go through a thorough review. I don't believe that it's going to be rejected to allow for rate increase, but I think they would significantly mitigate against their request is what I anticipate may be happening. I've got no firsthand information. That's just how I see these things play out oftentimes, not just with Pittsburgh, with other type of rate increases that go before the PUC. The good thing is now, Pittsburgh is under the PUC, which has not been the case, and not the case with other municipal entities. So I think that's going to help us manage and maintain what can be done with the PUC, require them to take steps to do other things. I will say that they've been successful with securing resources from PennVest. We just provided them. We worked on another grant, significant loan and grant for them to be able to continue the work that they're doing on lead line replacements across the city, and I think they've done a 180-degree turnaround with respect to how they're managing operations and how they're prioritizing how they need to deal with some of these things in Pittsburgh. Now, granted, more work needs to be done, and more local water authorities, quite frankly, need to be able to try to do what Pittsburgh's been doing along those lines. But the rate increase was significant, but I don't see it happening to the full amount in my belief, anyhow, but we shared that with those folks.
Thank you so much, Senator. Next, we are going to Marcia in Wilkinsburg. Go ahead, Marcia.
Hello. I appreciate everything that you and your administration are doing because it's not easy, especially when conflict of someone who work with you. For one, hopefully I will receive the home repair. I hope I put everything in because I need foundation, electricity, and water. But my main concern is that they got these wonderful programs, but it seems like I never qualify, and I'm 70. I said I should get everything. And the reason why I'm saying that is water, I don't qualify, okay? And I got information on it. And then in 2021, I must say, my furnace was messed up. I went to LIHEAP. But since in my mind, I can't lie. The woman wanted to help me, but that means I had to lie to say that my grandbaby lived with me and I couldn't do it. So we still suffered. Okay, but I want to say, they got the thing with lead in homes. If you got one person in there and they say children live with you or be with you all the time. With Lahey, they said live with you. If he said be with you all the time, because we still suffered. So that's my concern. How come they can do like the lead thing? Because the lead, if it's one person, I'm by myself now, and I have my grandbabies, that it's up to 36. How come they can't be raised? Because 20 is too low because I don't qualify. And then I'm a share. My three children couldn't wait to vote when Obama came in. Now my one, she's discouraged. She said, why should I vote? I don't get nothing anyway. So I'm just sharing that. Y'all doing great. Y'all doing great. I just want to say that. But that's my concern, that people who have light and water and they make over 20,000 whatever that year, they can't receive anything. And that's sad.
Well, we made the changes to help assist with the property tax and rent rebate. We need to do something similar with some of these programs. And I do think, like, if you're in Wilkinsburg, I know that you're part of Wolf Penn Joint Water Authority. We've got a lot of conversations with them about maybe implementing a customer assistance plan. So keep your eyes peeled for that. That might be something that may be coming in the near future that you may be able to access. We also have the weatherization programs. You may want to check, again, with Action Housing. If you're having a problem with your furnace or something along those lines, emergency-type situations, especially as we go into winter, they have some resources there, I believe, for weatherization things that need to be done that constitute an emergency to allow you to continue living in that home. So I would reach out to that. And the income limits might be a little different than what like the LIHEAP program or some of the other programs provide.
Thank you so much, Senator. Next, we are going to Lacey in Mount Washington. Go ahead, Lacey.
Hi, Senator. Thanks for having this call and for all that
you
do.
Thank you.
My question is related to the opioid settlement funds. I understand Pennsylvania is slated to get between $1 and $2 billion from that. Curious of what the plans are for allocating those funds.
So those conversations continue. We have an opioid distribution task force or task committee that's been looking at that. It's made up of experts from across the Commonwealth. It's also made up of legislators who participate and experts in that space in terms of how it needs to be driven out and to what degree and what are the counties getting, because they have their own bucket I think they might be looking to use. So I think that that conversation hasn't finalized yet in terms of how it's going to go out, but it's in the works, and I would anticipate that they'll start driving out those resources in the very near future. There's folks from the Pittsburgh area that are chairing that whole discussion. I can tell you that it was a significant hurdle to get folks all on the same page, but they were able to do that, and it's worked out well. But I just think the money is going to make its way out in the near future.
Thanks so much, Senator. Next, we are going to Allison from Oakland. Allison, go ahead.
Senator, thank you, and I'm a great fan of yours. I am wondering.
Thank you.
I have been, well, you just are everywhere, and I just think you're wonderful. I want to see if somebody can make some sense out of this recent transit business. My 71A and 71C are the buses that I go into town directly. And now it seems as though I'm going to have to take two buses and wait and cold weather. Nobody seems to know what's going on and when it's going to start and when we go to the same buses. Port Authority, you know, send a piece of paper out that doesn't say anything. What's going on with that?
Yeah, I wish I had more clarity for you at this point at that specific bus. I know that it's become more and more difficult in light of what's taking place with the rapid bus transit. Give our office a call, and what we can do is then reach out to Port Authority and get a very specific answer for you about what needs to be done and what steps we need to take. We'll be able to answer your question, where you get it at and what the status of that's going to be and so forth. But that's what I can tell you at this point in time. It is confusing, and I think until it gets worked out, I think it's going to be a bonus. It's going to be a plus for us. We just need to understand it to make sure that it is a bonus for us or a plus. So do me a favor. Give our office a call, 412-241-6690, and that'll be what we can get some help for you. Ask for either Sue or Molly or somebody that will be able to help work with you.
Okay. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you all. We're coming down the back end, so if you have a question you would like to ask, there's still a little time. You can press *3 on your keypad, and we'll get to your question when we can. Next, we are going to Chris in Forest Hills. Go ahead, Chris.
Good evening, everyone. My discussion is about HOA homeowners. And I live in a building where you have some homeowners and you have housing authority people that live here. So we're all on a fixed income. Now, what I wanted to find out, how often should the HOA people should raise the cost of your HOA, and how much can they raise it? Because we've been having Hello?
Yeah, you're still there.
Okay. We've had a boiler problem that caused water down on the first floor, and then but we had a meeting and our HOA was increased then at that time. Now they're asking for us to pay this one lump sum right now, but for October 1st. But then you also have the meeting also in this month is going to determine whether or not if our HOA is going up higher. So I just like to know when is the cap to that HOA? I mean, you know, I can understand if we had amenities in this building, but we don't. And it is a, like I said, like a senior, it is a senior citizen building, and we're all on a fixed income. So how does
I don't know whether or not there are caps to what they can do, and I think if they can cite an emergency situation like you just described, a boiler going down, that they would share those costs with the tenants in the facility. So I don't know the specific nature of your HOA, but we're happy to look into it. If it's here in Forest Hills, we'll be able to quickly get an answer for you and learn more about it. But again, if you want to give our office a call, we can talk about it and try to get an answer for you. But I think at the end of the day, it's I don't think there's any caps to what they can do, as long as it's reasonable, and if anybody protests against it, then I think that they should be able to push back on that. But it's an association, and I think they're in a position to be able to do that. Unfortunately, if the bad things are happening to the property and the facility, there's not a whole lot that can be done. I guess as long as they can make a reasonable case that they're sharing those assets.
Thank you so much. We're going to take a question from online very quickly. An Edgewood resident wanted to know what was being done to support police officers.
So we have provided some assistance for police entities across Pennsylvania with capital investments that could be made through the past budget. They would need to apply for some of these law enforcement grants across, the municipality would need to apply for that. The second thing we did is trying to encourage individuals to become police officers here in Pennsylvania, but also teachers and also nurses. Governor Shapiro has proposed that we provide them with a $2,500 tax credit program for 3 years to allow them to do that. They will receive a tax credit. Governor proposed it. We Democrats supported it. Unfortunately, we've not been able to get it across the finish line because our Republican colleagues do not support it. So that's kind of what we've tried to do, and that's what we've been doing, and we're going to continue to be able to try to push for those resources to assist them. It's also about helping local governments be as efficient as they can be. There's been a lot of conversations. There's a shortage of police officers, let's face it. But at the end of the day, we also need to know that we have to give the communities the tools to be able to better put together a larger footprint for police departments. Mergers, for example. Once you put together some of these mergers, as counties and cities are doing and municipalities are doing, it provides better efficiencies and, quite frankly, better policing. We need to do more of that as well. We cannot proceed down a path where we have part-time officers, jumping from one community to the next. We have more and more communities that are disbanding their police departments because the municipalities can't simply afford them. That's become problematic as well. So we got to make more investments along those lines to be able to do that.
Thank you so much, Senator. I think we only have time for maybe one or two more questions, so we're going to go back to the phone lines. Holly in Pittsburgh, you're on the line. Go ahead.
Hello, Senator. Thank you for having this meeting with us. Especially with the elections coming up, one of the things that dismays me is that we're going to start seeing sign after sign after sign after sign of the candidates. I get it, but they'll be there for the next couple of years. Pennsylvania is a beautiful state, and it saddens me to see how much garbage people don't care. Is there a way of introducing some kind of legislation, especially for candidates that are running for office, to kind of push to have people take the signs down afterwards, as a good faith, gesture for the community? Because, I mean, our kids deserve to live in a clean environment, especially in the city and, underserved neighborhoods. The guitar is to be happy about going out and working when your house is covered, yards are surrounded by trash, and I think it's one small thing they should do.
Yeah, I think a number of municipalities have ordinances on the book, and this is really a function of local governments have to do through ordinances. There's not something I think that the state can do, kind of take that authority away from our local governments. We can certainly encourage it, but I think mandating it or having establishing a law that says it has to be down by a date certain, I think that's, and also when you can put them up as well, particularly as it relates to public property. When you're talking about state property, I mean, I think the state clearly has the ability to come in and remove them as soon as they can. Oftentimes you do find them in local municipal roads or county roads that are not as quick to be able to remove them. But there should be a time after the election that they need to be removed. And I'm sure every candidate, they have enthusiastic supporters and the like, and sometimes they throw up signs, but they don't come back and take them down, and we have to do a better job of that. And I agree. I think it creates a lot of litter. There's free speech implications involved and preemption of local responsibility as part of that discussion as well. But, I mean, I know we try to do all of our signs as soon as we can and others as well. But we have to do a better job. I agree with what you're saying. And we can work towards that.
Well, Senator, I think that's all the time that we have. Would you like to say anything in closing?
No, I just want to thank everyone for participating and who hung on the calls. And the folks who didn't get a call back, we didn't get to answer your question. Stay on the line. We'll take care of that. I just want to make another announcement. We're going to do a shredding event on September 30th at the Woodland Hills High School for folks who are interested. So if you get a chance to bring some things up, we can do that. I do want to go back to the question about the opioid distribution. We have this task force in place. The bulk of the money coming to the county, coming to the state, is going to go to the counties to work through their distribution. That's something that came out a while back. That came out recently with the 13-member oversight board. They're going to make sure that counties and local governments get some of the money, and I think that we're going to continue to work on to be able to drive it out as well. But getting back to the more general things, our office is here available to folks. If you have any questions, please feel free to give us a call. You can check out what we're doing by going to SenatorCosta.com. You can check out our Twitter account. If you want to share your thoughts on anything we talked about today, give the office a call at 412-244-11. I'm sorry, that's my home number, 241-6690. Apologize. Any event, staff, thank you for hosting, and look forward to having another one of these conversations as we go forward.
Thanks,
everyone.
Very quickly, before we hang up, just to reiterate what the senator said, if we weren't able to get to your call tonight, please stay on the line. You'll be able to leave a message that the senator and his staff will be able to listen to. And as always, feel free to call the Forest Hills office at 412-241-6690 or visit our website at senatorcosta.com. Thank you to everyone who participated tonight. This was a delight, and have a great evening. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.